Good morning and welcome to Ed's World, where it's always morning, even in the afternoon, or late in the day on a work day, which is one of the first times I've ever done this before. I will tell you, Brian, this has been one of the hardest interviews that I've ever had to get, and it's not been with scheduling. It has been with, we have been fought with every technical difficulty we can find the whole way, but I am here, finally, with the host of the Brian Nichols Show, Brian Nichols. Welcome to Ed... I can't even make my own introduction. Welcome to Ed's World.
That's not bad. Thank you for having me on. I'm glad that despite the technical difficulties and all that fun stuff in between, we were able to get on the show. So I'm looking forward to a fun conversation.
Oh, I don't know what is going on over at YouTube here, but it looks like we are standing by. I don't know why. So let me figure out what's going on there. I have not dropped any frames, so... Oh, I hope this isn't going to sit here and wait because I scheduled us for 7:30. Oh, I hope this isn't going to sit here and wait because I scheduled us for 7:30. Let's look over here. This is great on-air production, too. Let's see what we've got going on here. I switch out here. Well, as case we are actually alive, which I have no idea if we are or not, but well, we should probably keep the conversation going. I'm going to switch my account over here on this and just have a look at the stream because I've got two accounts going on over here. Let's have a look and see what we've got going
Whoa,
on here.
Whoa, I'm hearing myself. Hey, we are going. I don't know why the stream is showing that I'm not, but...
Well, that's going to be. We got Michael Vega here because he's got to go and pick up and leave. Well, we're going to start this out as World's Worst live stream, but I've got Brian Nichols here going with us today, host of the Brian Nichols Show. We've got a lot to talk about here tonight, and we had a packed schedule the other night, but we had some technical difficulties, as I explained over on Twitter. Looks like the internal antenna for my internal wireless modem has gone bad, so that's why we're not doing this on a Monday night, and we're doing this on a Thursday night. But I think it's time for us to get to the show. But, and I don't like to do gotcha questions here, but I think I've got one for you here. I didn't want to spoil this by asking you in advance, but... I've been thinking about a couple things as we go along here. Well, there's my phone. That's going to be fun because that's all the way across the room. Libertarian presidential candidates. I had Keenan Wallace Dunham on my show not that long ago talking about his platform and the fact that he wanted to be a libertarian presidential candidate. But I thought about the libertarian platform some more and I kind of realized that and I want to get your honest take on this here. The libertarian platform seems to be completely antithetical to the idea of wanting to run for president, and I want to know what you thought about that.
It's not out of the realm of some of the libertarian candidates right now. Adam Kokesh is actually running to basically get rid of the presidency. He's running to be like the not president, where he said day one he would sign an executive order. I think it's defunding or just abolishing the federal government because it is, it's, like you said, antithetical to libertarian beliefs to have someone ruling over. Now, us in the libertarian camp who are more constitutionalist based, and I understand that you know that's not a pure ANCAP kind of perspective on things, but at the same point in time, I don't consider myself to be an ANCAP. I think that, you know, in where we are pragmatically in 2019, we had to have in some way, shape, or form some the government, whether, you know, just an entity of what we have now and is less of it or what have you. But anyways, back to the point is I don't think necessarily the constitutional approach to things coincides strongly with libertarianism as the platform. But I think you can be a small government, you know, little small L libertarian, you know, in a minarchist kind of approach and still be like a president or, you know, a Congress and so forth.
Hmm. Well, and that's a good thing to clear up too, because yeah, like I say, I looked at Gary Johnson and he was essentially a Republican. I mean, he was a Republican before he decided to go onto the Libertarian ticket, and you know, it always seemed antithetical to want to seek out that kind of power, but then to be against that kind of power on your platform. So thank you for clearing this up.
I mean, I don't want to seem like I'm speaking on behalf of all libertarians in the Libertarian Party, but I know, I mean, in case you didn't realize this, libertarians like to fight with each other. So it's, you know, who's more libertarian? You have the ANCAPs and the classical liberals and the minarchists and, you know, paleo libertarians and such. And like, you just go down the line and, you know, it's okay to have disagreement even within libertarian camps. And, you know, I think you'd ask a couple different libertarians and you get maybe a couple different answers.
Yeah, and I, you know, I've talked to some people who are border hawks that are libertarians, and I listen to the Jen the Libertarian podcast and have realized that she is a full-on open borders libertarian. So, I mean, there's a lot of infighting in the movement, and, you know, I talk to other people that, you know, there's that big purity test that you have to believe X, Y, or Z, or you're not a libertarian, you're still some kind of a statist. So, yeah, I understand where you're going with that entirely. But that's where I wanted to go with that, as we're going to keep this moving along. Brian's got a hard out here, so we've got a lot to get to and a little bit of time to get there. Looks like we've got a packed show today. We're going to be talking a little bit about 9/11 because that happened last week in the news. We'll talk about where we were at the time and what we think about the people who hadn't even been born yet saying they remember this. The Trump legacy and his appointments have had a little bit of news on them, so we'll talk a little bit about Bolton and Kavanaugh today. As we always do on this show, we'll be talking 2020, and I'm going to try and keep the show from being the debate show, even though that always seems to happen when we have a debate going on, but we'll talk about that. We'll talk a little bit about Bernie and Sarsour and Beto's gun agenda. There's been a vaping crisis in this country because 6 whole people have died from the phenomenon. And we'll talk about this in the executive order on that. And we'll close out the show talking about the little wins that Trump got out of the Supreme Court on immigration, especially surrounding Safe Third Country and the wall. It is going to be all of this and more on Ed's World. Thank you for watching this on YouTube in the second ever live stream of Ed's World. If you like what you see, you can go ahead and subscribe, or you can watch this later over on BitChute, where it will be uploaded again. Ed's World will be available on audio platforms, iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. These will be available, well, Friday morning this time. Usually it's Tuesday morning, but it'll be Friday morning this time, ready to go and ready to take us on the go. Ed's World is proudly partnered with Freedom Scoop. Our merchandise shop is open at this point, so head on over. The link is down below in the description. Get one of our great t-shirts, and if you use that promo code JEDGAR at checkout, you will get 15% off of your t-shirt. I want to make one quick announcement before we get into the guest explaining a bit about himself and say that because this is a live stream, we will be answering questions between topics. I won't be able to monitor the live chat while we're going, but I'll check in between topics. So if you have a question for myself or the guest on any of the topics, feel free and we will answer them as we go between. But after a lengthy introduction and a little bit of on-air production, Brian, why don't you tell us a bit about yourself?
I am host of the Brian Nichols Show, which is a part of the We Are Libertarians Network. I've been the host of the show since January of 2018. It's been a blast. I've had a lot of great guests on my show, from political activists to entrepreneurs to politicians, elected officials. So of those, some notable names, Justin Amash, Larry Sharp, Wolf Von Lehren from Students for Liberty, Austin Peterson, Kim Ruff, and many, many more. So really what I am fond of is trying to educate, enlighten, and inform my audience, and really to help advance the prospects and principles of liberty. So I take my show as a more open and a welcoming approach, mostly due to the fact that I think that too often in society today, we really don't talk to each other. We talk past each other, or we get into our tribes and we just won't talk to each other at all. So, you know, my show is much more open and welcoming. I had a guy on my show named Keith Rubino, who is one of the Northeast, I think, club leader or something for a Bernie's for America. And I did a whole segment called Ask a Democratic Socialist, where I had my my audience write into me, and I asked questions on air that were posed that were pretty tough questions. But at the same point in time, we were able to have an open and cordial dialogue despite having fundamental disagreements in ideology. So in a nutshell, that's who I am, and that's the show, and that's why I love to do what I do and promote the message of liberty.
Well, I have a question I always ask my guests, and it's one of my favorite questions to ask because the answer is always different, but the answer always leads over onto the left side of the screen over at Ed's World. But I want to know, how did you decide to do a podcast and get into the alternative media in the first place?
Well, it's funny. I started doing college radio back when I was in college. I was a co-host on a top 40 radio station, and I loved the medium of radio. So I was always politically involved, and, you know, I went to college for political science and business. And, you know, I was always looking to continue to advance my principles, my beliefs. So I did get involved for politics for a while, working on campaigns. And then I, you know, once I graduated, went into the private sector and got some jobs and such. And yeah, I still wanted to be able to promote liberty. So I ended up joining Austin Peterson's Libertarian Republic. Mm-hmm. And he had me on as an associate editor, and he gave me the opportunity to do a podcast. And it was called Around the Republic. And it basically was a weekly summarization of topics that were happening that week. And you know, I thought it would be a great means to use a podcast to reach people that I otherwise wouldn't have been able to reach. And do it in a way that I feel most comfortable with, being that of, in a way, radio-ish, being a podcast. So I was at Austin Peterson's Libertarian Republic as a podcaster for about 3 or 4 months or so. And then I got reached out to by Chris Spangle to join the We Are Libertarians Network after I appeared a couple on their shows. He's built a phenomenal empire over there at We Are Libertarians of great shows from the main channel, We Are Libertarians, the Boss Hog of Liberty. We have a couple new shows like Gingerarchy with Trisha Stewart. So it's really a great honor to be a part of such a really strong libertarian podcasting network. Still be able to maintain my role as an associate editor over at Libertarian Republic. So yeah, that's kind of the long answer to the question.
Well, we do like long answers around here too, because they are more detailed, and the more detail we get, the better grasp we get on the news. Like I always say, find all the facts and draw your own conclusions. Before we get into topics here, we'll just take a quick glance over at the live chat here. Looks like we had Michael Vega, who actually helped make sure that, let us know that we were going live. So, and he bid rest in peace to my modem too. So thank you for that, Michael Vega. He says he remembers that day. I'm guessing he's talking about 9/11, which we'll talk about in a second. And he assures us that he will be listening to us in the car. So probably be listening back on the audio platform. So thank you, Michael Vega, for joining us today. But it's time to get into what we're here to talk about. And as George Carlin said right after it all happened, we can't really ignore the elephant in the room. It's time to talk about what's going on. You can feel it in the air, you can feel it in the city, rather, and that is the events of 9/11 and all of the events that followed. So I'm not 100% sure how old you are. You appear on screen to look about the same age as I am, but where were you when you found out that the planes had flown into the building?
I was actually in elementary school.
I'm quite a bit older than you. I apologize.
Yeah. My printer decided to start printing randomly. I think I have ghosts in my house. So I forgive me for the printer sound. That's so weird. Sorry, it caught me off guard a little bit. I was in elementary school, and I remember I was walking down the hall as a student teacher into the classroom. We were like in between classes, and she ran into an open classroom, and she said, "Oh my God, we're under attack. They hit New York City. Like they hit." And I didn't realize what it was that was actually happening. And watched the events on TV with the evening news. And that was really eye-opening for me, being, you know, so young, and to be able to see, you know, their world change before your eyes. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, it was something that I remember to this day, like sitting at the kitchen table and looking up at the TV on top of the refrigerator. And it was real.
Well, see, it's interesting to me on the other end of that because, I mean, you were in elementary school. You were quite young at the time. And do you mind if I ask where you're from or, like, where you were at the time growing? I don't know if you moved around a lot when you were younger or not, but...
Yeah, so I'm from New York. I'm from upstate New York, though.
Okay.
So pretty much as far north as you can go in New York State, more or less.
Okay. So, I mean, this was closer to you as well because, I mean, you're only maybe, what, a few hundred miles off at that point. This was...
And actually, I was beyond just being a little bit more north of New York City. I actually was about an hour or so north of Fort Drum, which is one of the larger military bases in the United States, and about 40 minutes or so away from the Eisenhower Locks, which is the main entry point for the St. Lawrence River Seaway.
Okay.
So there were, and there's actually a very large, I forget, I think it's the Eisenhower, I think that's the name of it, on the St. Lawrence River. It was also considered to be a target. So area being on the border was completely shut down. I mean, I remember Border Patrol cars everywhere. Surreal. It was like you were in a movie almost.
Hmm. Well, and yeah, you're a lot closer to it than I was. I'm from West Central Wisconsin in a very small town. A town so small that I can't even say where it is because you'll be able to dox me just off of that. Just because I was that. But I was also, that was my senior year of high school. And it was homecoming week on pajama day as well. So we were all getting ready for school spirit, wearing our pajamas and everything and thinking everything was great. And, you know, then we just start watching this unfold on TV right in front of our eyes. And it's the same thing. I mean, we're still young, but we had a grasp of some of what was going on in the world. I mean, we knew that Hussein was... I mean, we didn't think he was... Well, some of us thought we were involved, but we knew that he had things going on between the Clintons and the Bush era, and I heard a lot of people speculate that that's what it was. I heard a lot of people speculate Russia at the time, and nobody really knew what to take out of it. A lot of solemn faces and a lot of festive pajamas is pretty much what it all amounted to.
Yeah, and it's funny. Chris Spangle actually talks about 9/11 a lot because he turned 18 the day before 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
And how surreal it was for him to think that, you know, in Selective Service, the front edge of being, you know, somebody who could be drafted. I think a lot of people had that reaction, like, okay, this is different. This is a big deal.
It's funny you say that because I actually have a cousin who was legitimately one day older than your friend at that point if he turned 18 a day before, because my cousin turned 18 on 9/9 of that same year. It's been jarring. It's been jarring to think about. I know a lot of people try to make the association now with 9/11, given the fact that we now have Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar in Congress and how we've come so far and descended into evil because of it. And I don't think that's bad that we have them in Congress this close after 9/11. I don't care for either woman, I'm not going to lie, but we've come far enough in tolerance as a country, which I was promised when I was in middle school and high school that race would be gone by the time I was the age that I am, that we just wouldn't see it anymore. And then 9/11 happened and it came back, and we evolved quick enough that we were able to put Muslim women into the House of Representatives so quickly after 9/11. I mean, it's only been 2 decades. Given our race history in this country, that is a blink of an eye. So I think it's good, honestly. What do you take on that?
Them being in Congress?
Well, just the fact that we've come this far to have them in Congress so close after a disaster where everybody was blaming the entire Middle East.
Yeah, I mean, it's great to see that we have come so far, honestly. You know, I know for a fact, you know, where I am now, in Philadelphia. Like, there are people who 9/11 happened who were of Muslim religion and of faith. You know, people that I see now on a daily basis who I can't imagine what life must have been like, you know, being just considered to be the enemy because of your faith. So to see that realization that that's not the case, that's not all Muslims. That was not, you know, it was Saudi Arabians with box cutters, mm-hmm. who were trying to you know, take down America. And honestly, a lot of it's due to our over in the Middle East to begin with. Causing the mayhem over there that inspired the people of, you know, the Taliban, in this case Al Qaeda, to come after us as almost you know, a revenge ploy. I mean, Bin Laden was even saying that to get America into a never ending conflict that would bankrupt us. Back to your main point, to see that we have been able to, as a society, were just, you know, less than just shy of 20 years ago. And elect two female, you know, Muslim members of Congress. I think it's very reassuring to see that we can do that as a society, and it definitely gives me some hope for the future.
I'm going to keep this moving along right now, but I do want to grab one other take from you here, and that is the fact that all across social media on that day, I saw various people of various ages telling us how much they remembered 9/11. Many of these people were less than 19 years of age at the time, and I appreciate the sentiment because it was a traumatizing event. It was something that definitely make us take notice, especially those of us who were adults at the time, to watch and do this. But what are your takes on people who were like a year old or less when this all happened, saying that they remember all of this?
I guess. I don't know. I never really thought about the people like that. If they feel that, I guess that's why they're doing it. But I mean, I guess I never really thought about it to have a take on it, honestly.
I don't know. It's kind of weird to me because, yeah, these people don't know any other world other than a post 9/11 world, a post Patriot Act world, a post world where we've been in Afghanistan for legitimately their entire lives, and you don't know what the difference was. One of the spiciest things that I always say about 9/11 was the fact that I don't think Bush did it, but I think that was the gift that he was looking for to keep the economy from collapsing during his term and being able to push it off until the next presidency.
I don't want to assume the beliefs of George Bush, but you know, it's been shown by you know, quite any time that you go into a conflict, you almost always have a more surge in the support of the president. So we saw that back with Bush 1. We saw that with Clinton back with Kosovo. We saw that with Bush with 9/11, mm-hmm. with Trump with Syria. So, and we saw that with Obama with Bin Laden. So, you'll see that there will be these peaks of support to the president when those kind of things do happen.
Well, and it's not just that. I mean, I look at the fact that suddenly people had combat pay every day. They were sending that kind of money home, plus the fact that we had the ad campaign of do this and buy this or the terrorists win constantly going on all around us as well. And I think that kept the economy afloat for, I don't know, six more years before it actually would have crashed. I think it would have crashed in probably 2002 had it not been for 9/11. What's your take on that?
On the economy crashing?
Yeah.
If you're familiar with Peter Schiff, Peter Schiff's been pretty much calling recession for years, and he started really more focusing on 2004. I'm not really sure what his take was prior to that, but I mean, he was identifying the crisis in 2004 being that of the housing bubble. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm crashed as early as then because, I mean, we were still kind of on the upswing from the dot-com bubble.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure if it would have burst much earlier. There definitely is always an increase in economic production when you have country, like with war. But at the same point in time, the net negative to that and going into more and more debt, and obviously we're, you know, $20 trillion plus in debt now. And a lot of that is a consequence of, number one, our countless, endless foreign interventions, but also you know, our raising domestic spending here at home.
I gotta keep this moving along here, but let's check in with the chat. Looks like Vega is still sitting in the chat, talking, as always. Michael Vega was in first grade, and he's asking if we're gonna try and talk shit about him at 6 years old, but we are not. But many of the people who are much younger than you are also saying that they remember, and those are the ones I'm more concerned about. Let's have a look at what we got going on here. Let's talk about John Bolton, because it seems that he got fired the day before his favorite holiday, which would have been 9/11, because of his war hawkishness. And what is Bolton being out do for the administration, do you think?
What does his being out of the administration do? I mean, yeah. I think it definitely will get rid of someone who is you know, very hawkish in their foreign policy approach, mm-hmm. Which is nothing but a net positive for, you know, the country as a whole. You know, there's reports that Bolton is really pushing to go after Iran. I would not be surprised in the slightest if he had had his way, we would currently be in a conflict with Iran. So to see that the policy instinct that Trump was showing back during the primaries, that he's maintaining that's a good sign in my book, and to show that he really is standing up to the other, you know, the hawks in the GOP. Lindsey Graham tweeted the president saying that he was showing a sign of weakness in how he handled Iran. He snapped back and he said, no, Lindsey, this is, you know, we're going through a different approach. You know, we're using it as a sign of strength, but we're not attacking. We're going to be, you know, doing diplomacy, but also we're going to be, you know, leading the way and not starting more foreign conflicts. That's I think a very good thing. I think honestly a lot of that is also helpful due to the fact that Rand Paul has been in his ear. You know, a lot of libertarians get mad at Rand because they think that he's, you know, he's too GOP and he's too buddy buddy with Trump. The reality is we are in a political world, and in order to accomplish your principles into action, you need to play politics, and that's what Rand Paul has been doing. And I dare say Rand Paul has been one of the most influential libertarians from a purely policy perspective in actually getting things done than any libertarian we've really had. I mean, to think that his very input alone may have stopped us from going to war with Iran, that's pretty cool. And that's because, you know, Rand Paul, despite not being a big L libertarian, he is a libertarian at heart, and he understands the damage that all these foreign interventions have been doing to us. So, yeah, I think it's really good to see we have a moment happening right now in the White House. It's a libertarian. Just want to make sure we're all on the same page there, because Trump is not a libertarian by any stretch. But he has libertarian-leaning tendencies, and that's usually the tendencies we see that are, you know, probably being pushed by Senator Paul.
And that's an interesting point to bring up, because I think who is it I heard talking about today? I think it was Styx I heard talking about the fact that, I mean, Trump has really moved us in or out from a neocon, churchy Republican Party into a populist libertarian kind of party. He's not a libertarian, but he does have the leanings toward it. And he knows how to play to the people who are libertarian, I think.
He does, but he also knows how to play towards the economic nationalists. And that's I think, a little bit, I don't want to say it's more concerning to me. Yes, he does have some libertarian tendencies, I think more primarily on foreign policy. He's also been really promoting the right to try, mm-hmm. Which I think is very good too. You know, he's been doing very, very good in deregulation. But at the same point in time, I mean, he's got us still involved in some of these foreign conflicts. You know, we've been still supporting Saudi Arabia in their, you know, bombing in Yemen. We still are signing these, you know, kicking down the can budget deals that are not only going to be increasing our debt by trillions and trillions of more dollars, but we're putting more future generations into just mountains of debt. It's going to be almost insurmountable, and we're setting ourselves up for economic disaster. You know, I think things that Trump does, there's still, it's very important the very dangerous policies that he has implemented as a Republican who is some, yes, libertarian leanings in some certain areas. I mean, Neil Gorsuch was a slam dunk as a Supreme Court justice. And then Justice Kavanaugh is, you know, he's a run-of-the-mill Republican judge. So, you know, I don't know if he, because he was, Gorsuch is more, you know, libertarian leanings as a judge, or if he just was told, hey, pick this guy. Didn't have a better idea of. But yeah, more or less, I think it's good to see some libertarian leanings in Trump, but it's also very important to make sure we continue to point out the very non-libertarian things he does.
Yes, absolutely. We are running up on the clock here, so I'm going to shift some things around because I want to make sure that we get at least some time to talk the debate. I know you said 9:15 your time, you've got a hard out. I lost your audio there for a second, I apologize. I've lost your audio entirely. I hope this isn't going to affect the entire show. Just checked over the live chat. Looks like Vega's taken off here. But let's move along over into the debates, because I want to make sure that we have some time to talk about that. This past week, it looks like we had the third round of Democrat debates, and we moved this on into one night. There was plenty to talk about that went on onto the stage, even though we had half the candidates. And the first thing I want to do is I want to take some time and I want to read something that I wrote immediately after the debate. I posted it in my friend's Discord, and if you'll allow me the brief, I just want to say this is what I gathered from the shit show that was the debates. Number one, Kamala Harris is a supervillain. She's not even trying to hide that anymore. 2, Andrew Yang started a business. 3, Amy Klobuchar prays that the stereotype is real and no one actually lives in Minnesota, so no one can remember her real record. 4, Elizabeth Warren has been coronated by the Hillary National Committee. 5, Joe Biden is a stand-in put up by a joint sum of money between the AFL-CIO and the Democratic Socialists of America to take the beating from God Empress Kamala and Bernie Sanders and keep people from paying too much attention to Warren. Robert O'Rourke has never had a real experience, just the scripted ones that every town hands him. Cory Booker overacts so much that Shatner tells him to tone it the fuck down. Mayor Pete might not enforce absolute tyranny, just the friendly, happy tyranny we're already used to. Bernie Sanders needs to see his cardiologist right now. And lastly, Julian Castro speaks Spanish. So, did you watch the debates, first and foremost?
Highlights, because I usually don't get home until, you know, like 7:30, 8 o'clock at night as it is. So, I just can't subject an extra, you know, 2 hours, 3 hours of my day to just being miserable watching something like that. So I did watch the highlights, and, you know, that's just the reality. I just didn't have the time. But no, I mean, it is what you'd expect in 2019, right? It's just, you know, who can give me the most free stuff? You know, who's going to be able to hurt most? That's really, you know, what it came down to.
The one thing that I wanted to bring up, and this is the most disturbing thing to me, is Kamala Harris essentially admitted the fact that she is going to be a supervillain tyrant. She's going to snap her fingers and dissolve the Galactic Senate like Darth Sidious did in the beginning of Star Wars A New Hope. She's just going to dissolve it all, she's going to take it all over, and she's going to take our guns away with an executive order if they won't play ball with her. And when this was pointed out to her, and we were told that there's a constitution in her way, she just laughed it off and said, why say why we can't? Let's just say why we can.
Mm.
Are we surprised? Go ahead.
It's Kamala Harris. I mean, that's why she was trending on Twitter back when Tulsi Gabbard just destroyed her on stage. But it was hashtag Kamala Harris is a cop. As this, you know, progressive transformative figure, but that's all about criminal justice reform. But the reality is that her record shows the exact opposite. I mean, like, Tulsi rightly pointed out last time, you know, you were putting kids in prison. You were doing the exact same thing as a prosecutor. That's insane. Look at Tulsi, or I'm sorry, we look at Kamala, and then you know what she's saying in terms of how she'd approach the Constitution, violate different rights in the Constitution. Why she would expand the size of the executive branch and violate the really the and continue to grow those executive orders and expand the scope of the executive orders. I mean, it's worse than it already has been, but I mean, on the flip side, the reason it keeps getting worse is because the precedents set by the presidents in the past. Mm-hmm. So it's just going to open the door for, you know, the next president, be it a president, Trump Jr. or Ocasio-Cortez, to use the executive more and more, and honestly, more outside the confines of the scope of the Constitution.
I want to point out something that you said just there right now, and that's the fact that, yes, we have more and more power going into the presidency, which, I mean, if these little left-wingers out there were so worried about the fact that Donald Trump was going to get these powers, they shouldn't have given all of these powers to the presidency to begin with. But which one of the squads was it? It was Ilhan Omar brought up an interesting point of the fact that she reminded us all that when Trump was talking about the Syria and the, or not Syria, the Iran and Saudi Arabia event that I'm going to be talking with Steffi about next week, she said that the president doesn't have the power to declare war. And this was something dangerous that he was going to be using. And, I mean, even a blind squirrel gets a nut every once in a while. And that's absolutely right. Congress has ceded so much power to the presidency. Yes, we haven't declared an official war since Korea, but we still have, the president has the unilateral power to make military strikes without going to an official war. And I don't like that.
Does anybody? Honestly? Like, it's
John Bolton.
I'll say there are some people, yes, like the John Boltons of the world. Yeah, you beat me to it. That definitely do like that. Become so apathetic. People don't care. Worst part, that's honestly why I started my show, was because I was trying to get more people involved in the political process to listen to different points of view, and to hear things well thought out versus the bumper sticker, the bumper sticker slogan, or the, you know, just ridiculous Facebook post that's, you know, ad hominems galore. Educate fellow, you know, neighbors, because they likely don't know what's happening. They don't understand, how dangerous it is that the president right now has been talking about, you know, just going unilaterally as, the executive, saying if Saudi Arabia says it was Iran, then we're going to go after Iran, when in regards to the bombing that took place at that oil refinery in Saudi Arabia. So, like, that's horrifying. That should not even be on the table. I mean, the fact that Trump is even saying it shows of how they don't care, like, because people don't care. Like, they're not worried about retribution, except for, you know, maybe the libertarians out there and a few of those, you know, old, you know, anti-war Democrats who I know they're an endangered species, but they are there somewhere. But we have gotten so apathetic as a people that people aren't paying attention to what's happening. And that's the worst part, is the fact that people aren't paying attention, and there seems to be no incentive or desire on their behalf to pay attention. They don't, you know, crashing and burning around them, because right now things seem relatively okay. We are easily one of the most privileged people in the world, for the mere fact that we're Americans and we've been the most prosperous nation that the world's ever seen. So we feel numb to worrying about the things that are happening outside of our spheres of influence in the United States, and we don't realize the very real damaging ramifications that will play, on us.
I want to go back into the debates here for just a second and, you know, step out of the current president that we have right now. And just based on the projections that you saw here, who do you think won and who do you think lost the most on, what was that, last, that was a week ago today, wasn't it?
I would say probably Booker won, for the mere fact that go super like crazy eyes and like just come across as like this very rehearsed rehearsed, right? But it didn't come across as overtly rehearsed as he's come across in the other debates. Yang was actually pretty good. He's my dark horse. I'm not just saying that because I know there's like the whole Yang gang out there that is a big fan of Yang, but I could not believe the crowd that he had at the art museum. And I was like, get out of here. Like, this is wild that there's this many people for Andrew Yang. Because other than, you know, being at 4% in the Democratic polls before this, people really hadn't heard of him. And, you know, everybody's pretty much heard of, you know, either Joe Biden being the former vice president or Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders. But like, here's this guy, Andrew Yang, that nobody heard of up until a year ago. And he's making waves and he's actually, you know, pulling a lot of support thing that Trump has. He has that sense of like, you know, Joe Biden's sense of like being real kind of got weird when he got old because they turned into like these old manisms that you're like, oh, no, grandpa, go back to sleep, like go back. Whereas, like Andrew Yang's being, you know, funny and hip and stuff on stage comes across very genuine. And I think that's why, you know, honestly, Trump did as well as he did last time because he came across as genuine. Somebody you might not like, but you know that he's being genuine when he's just being a jerk. Fact that they may not like it, but they respect it because they feel they're not being lied to. They're not being BS'd to. And I think Andrew Yang kind of taps into a very similar sentiment. As for losers, it's funny because he's gotten the most attention, but Beto, what he has done. He has not only inspired people to go out and purchase more AR-15s and guns just in general, but he is inspiring the base for Trump. Have somebody like a Beto O'Rourke say, yeah, we're going to go after your guns and your AR-15s and your AK-47s, and he goes on the list. People get, and when people get fearful, people act. This is one thing Larry Sharp and I talked about when Larry was on my show. Fear is one of the driving factors in any decision, whether it's in politics, in business, in personal life. When you are afraid of something, you're willing to do things that you might not realize are not good for yourself. Really, the key component is this sense of fear.
All right. Well, I've got three questions I always ask when we get done talking about 2020. And I think at that point, we're probably going to have to run through the outro right after that because looks like we're running up against the clock here. But first question, as always, is statistically, given what we saw at the debates, we haven't really seen any polls out yet, except for a couple outliers. But who do you think, as of right now, with what we've seen, is going to be the nominee for 2020 for the Democrats?
The obvious answer would be Joe Biden. I think that feels like the safe answer, and that's why I don't think it's going to be Joe Biden. I think Joe Biden is safe to the point of being like Jeb-like. Mm-hmm. That is telling me Elizabeth Warren. Could see Bernie be sneaky. And that's the thing right now with Elizabeth Warren and Bernie is that they're not going at each other because their bases are very similar. Mm-hmm. But they're avoiding the fight, relying on that so they can ride into the, you know, first place, but because the two camps being Warren and Biden's camp, or I'm sorry, Warren and Sanders camps, they aren't fighting and they're not together. So they're separated and supporting two different candidates. And Biden can, you know, pull away a plurality and walk away with the nomination. Depends where Bernie sees an opening. I after Warren, but I think Warren would go after him if it ever came down to like finding an opening and she could go forward with it and go head to head with Biden. My dark horse though would be Andrew Yang. I think Andrew Yang, he again, like I said earlier, he's a genuine sense of self and he comes across transparent and honest and got that energy level that could really, you know, drive him forward, kind of like what happened with Trump. So I'm probably gonna say it's gonna be Warren, but the dark horse I would say is Yang. And if it was Biden, I wouldn't be surprised, but I'm leaning probably with Warren right now.
Okay, so the next question is if Trump were to stroke out on the campaign trail and you have to have one of these, what are we down to, 22 candidates left? Which one of the candidates would you like to see as president if you had to have one of the Democrats be the president right now out of this field?
Probably, I'm probably going to say Tulsi. And I'll tell you why for each one. Tulsi, because foreign policy is so much, and I think she would do a great job in leading a sane voice of foreign policy to get us out of these, you know, just never-ending wars. Domestic policy, but foreign policy would be very, very important first to look at. I say Yang because I'm not sure his universal basic income or his freedom dividend through, because you have to use an act of Congress to get this through, because it impacts the purse. So Yang on a couple of shows, and he seems to have common sense leanings. Yes, it's dangerous in some of his approaches to almost like an economic nationalism as well. Would be more moderate. And I say Biden because Obama 2.0, anything during Obama 1.0, Republicans went back to this sense of Constitution and free markets and, you know, personal responsibility and personal liberty, whereas under Trump they have shown to be the moderates, the neocons that they really are. And that's why people like a Justin Amash, they come across so you know, out there in left field, because they were elected as the true limited government candidates, and they've remained the same. It's the GOP who shifted. So you have people who are still there, like the Amashes and the Masseys and the Rand Pauls and the Mike Lees, who considered to be super far right relative to their party just because the party shifted so far to the left.
Well, my last question I always ask during this segment is entertainment value. Not for policy, not for statistics, not for anything else, just for pure entertainment. Which one of these candidates over on the left would you like to see sit back and have a debate with Donald Trump?
For what was it again? For just the, like,
for the pure entertainment value. What are you going to laugh at the most come the debate time?
Williamson. That'd be freaking hilarious. I mean, she would be all out, like soccer mom, mm-hmm. with her essential oils, and then Trump would just be there with his red hair, or not red hair, his orange hair and orange face, and just be like trying to yell down her like stupid mom, and it'd be glorious because she'd be all voodoo mama juju on him, and he would just be berating and just be entertaining, to say the least.
Well, that's I think all we're gonna have time for here today, because looks like we got 6 minutes out here. Or we've got to get to a hard out here. But the last question that I always want to ask all my guests is to describe a hobby that you have that has nothing to do with politics or work. It could be an album that you picked up, an instrument that you play, just something that helps you wind down when you're not thinking about what kind of a mess this country is going to be in.
Actually, a classically trained musician. So I was a classically trained vocalist. And I play piano, trumpet, baritone, tuba, trombone, I love have a that I'll play that's very relaxing. I love listening to music. My secret talent, and I also do love to sing too, one of my all-time passions is singing. I was in musicals in college and such, and you know, always involved in singing groups and, you know, choirs and such like that. So yeah, that's kind of my I don't know if it's really a secret, but it's definitely one of the things that I really enjoy to do, and yeah, it's like, I guess, a talent I have.
Well, thanks for helping me out with this show. I mean, this has been a challenging one for sure, but let's take some time and get you back here at some point when we can get a full 75-minute show. not something that happened just because we've got technical difficulties left and right. And I mean, it wasn't just the modem. When we first connected the call, my microphone was doing nothing but buzzing. So we've got a lot of stuff fixed.
We powered through. We made it.
Absolutely. And that is, I'm glad that we got a chance to power through here. Before you go, to my guests, if you do want to take some time and finish the conversation with Brian over on his social media or listen to his show, why don't you tell us where they can find you?
Please. This is the part where the podcaster host comes in, right? So Brian Nichols Show, we air every show usually on Friday mornings at 6 a.m., just in time for you to go have your drive to and from work. So it's the Brian Nichols Show. You can find it wherever you get podcasts. If you go to Apple Podcasts, number one, please go ahead and give me a rating and a review, 5 stars as always. Or you can get it pretty much anywhere, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Spotify. You can even ask Alexa to do it. She'll play the show, which is pretty cool. Now, as for me, you can find me over on social media, both on Twitter and on Facebook, which I will tell you a story about. Twitter at B Nichols Liberty, Facebook at B Nichols Liberty. But don't go to the Facebook yet unless you just want to like the page, because I can't post because Facebook freaking suspended me. And I was so mad because they suspended me because of a pro was talking about bump stocks. And I was so mad because it was a week-long suspension. So I can't post anything until Saturday. So I apologize to my fans who have not been able to get I've been posting on a frequent basis. It's Facebook's fault about that. But anyways, at being Nichols Liberty, that's where I usually do my commentary and political snark and sass. That's my my go-to. So yeah, if you enjoy having me on the show and you enjoy the content, again, it's Brian Nichols Show wherever you find podcasts, and you can always get in touch with me. Email me brian@briannicholsshow.com.
And I have taken the liberty of linking the Twitter account and the Stitcher version of the Brian Nichols Show down in the description below. And as you're going down there, why don't you reach by and hit that like button if you like what you saw, hit that subscribe button if you're not subscribed already. Or if you're going to take this on the go, you can find us over on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. And just like Brian said for his show, if you're over on iTunes, leave us that 5-star rating and a good review. That always helps a podcaster move up the audio platforms. Ed's World is once again proudly partnered with the Freedom Scoop Media Group. Make sure you go over there and check out our merch shop, check out our t-shirts, and help us take the liberty to the rest of the country. As we always say on this show, never take the words of bloggers, podcasters, or journalists as gospel. Find all the facts and draw your own conclusions. Brian, you have last word.
Yeah. Listen, it was a blast, Ed. And I think these kind of conversations are what we need to have more of. I think this is how people are able to learn more and really learn who we're about, being libertarians, being liberty activists, being small government, even though I know my ANCAP friends will tell me no, that I'm a heathen. But with that being said, if you have a talent that you can utilize to help promote liberty, do it like that. If you're a behind-the-scenes person who's really good at doing the homework, arm the salespeople, give us all the ammunition we can do to go sell liberty. We all have a part to play, whether it's in politics, whether it's in the market, whatever it may be. Find your calling to help advance liberty, and that's how we're going to win the future.
And thank you for being on the show. Thank you to the audience. And just one quick announcement before I hit the end of the stream. We will be back on regular schedule. So we will be back on Monday with Steffi Cole. Thanks for watching, and take care.